Are you ready to get serious and take your physical fitness goals to the next level? Then check out LegacySupps.com. Legacy Sports Nutrition believes everything you want to achieve in life can be aided by optimizing human performance. Their formulas have been professionally developed and are made to the highest quality standards. Legacy Sports Nutrition is founded and operated by athletes who have been performing at world-class levels for decades, including the world's real champion of the National Wrestling Alliance, the national treasure himself, the dealer, Nick Aldis. Extraordinary results require extraordinary action. If you're in your prime, their supplements will take you to that next level. If you're starting to feel past your prime, they have something for you too. Let's face it, the more miles you put on your vehicle, you're going to get some wear and tear, plus the fuel tank is going to get a little low. The same goes for your body. Take it from me, the older you get, your body starts to experience that wear and tear, and just like your fuel tank, your testosterone will start to decrease as well. But there's good news. Want something to help boost that T? They got it. Want something to help bulk up and pack on some muscle? They got it. Want something to help cut weight and get shredded? They got it. Want a pre-workout to help energize you and power you through a workout? They got it. Want something to help you to get the rest and the sleep your body needs to recover and grow? They got that too. Figure out what your goals are, then go to LegacySupps.com and find which supplement will help get you there. It's science that a well-developed nutritional supplement protocol, when added to consistent training and quality nutrition, will push your results to the next level. Set your goals, push your limits, leave your legacy. Go to LegacySupps.com. Have you been in quarantine? Are you ready to enter the wild again? There's a chance no one has seen your coconuts in months. Don't ruin your first post-quarantine date with hairy coconuts. Would you show up to the first day of school without a haircut? Nope. Manscaped is here to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. The Lawnmower 3.0 is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of the ceramic blade and advanced skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced by preparing yourself for a post-quarantine life. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 Essential Kit. The Perfect Package 3.0 comes with new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag for you to use when you're done quarantining. The Perfect Package 3.0 also comes with Manscaped Crop Preserver Deodorant and Crop Reviver Toner. The Crop Preserver is anti-chafing deodorant, which ensures your afternoon stroll through the jungle doesn't result in sticky coconuts. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner and made with soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts to give your coconuts a special boost. Subscribers to the Peak Hygiene Plan get a new replacement blade refill for your Lawnmower 3.0 delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean. The light is at the end of the tunnel, fellas. Treat yourself for making it through the quarantine and welcome back to the jungle with a Perfect Package 3.0. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code SLOPDROP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com when you use SLOPDROP, S-L-O-P-D-R-O-P. Your first post-quarantine date will thank you.
That's a slop drop. I can answer that. That's a slop drop. What is that move? That's a slop drop. Slop drop time. Oh, that is a slop drop. It's a slop drop. Slop drop, slop drop. Slop drop. The slop drop indeed.
Welcome back to the Slop Drop. This is Nathan Rogers at WooPigSumo on Twitter. And as usual, I'm joined by the unluckiest man in the world, Bad Luck Chapman, the manager of champions, Mr. Stephen E., the voice of the Twin Lakes Sports Network, the loose cannon, David McBee, and the current NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the national treasure, the dealer, Mr. Nick Aldis. Welcome to the show, champ.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm ready to drop some slop.
Let's drop some slop. On. Hey, I got to tell you, on a scale of 1 to 10, you're looking like an 11 today.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. This is the first and maybe only time I've ever done anything called a slop drop. I hope that maybe it will be the only one.
You're obviously an athletic physical specimen. What made you decide to pursue professional wrestling, and what was your first impression seeing the completed GPB studio?
Well, those are two very different questions. Well, the as far as wrestling goes, I think there was a part of me that was always, when I think back now, you know, the two things that I was sort of drawn to the most in terms of watching them on TV or VHS or anything like that were sporting events and concerts. Which is funny now, because now I don't, you know, I love music. I mean, I listen to, you know, I have a completely eclectic music taste, but sort of, I'm not really that bothered about going to gigs or concerts or anything as an adult. But, you know, as a kid, I just, you know, I would see things like Live Aid, or, you know, my mom was a big Eric Clapton fan. So we had all these Eric Clapton VHS type stuff, and I would see him playing these arenas and stuff and just be like, wow, this is the coolest thing ever. And then with sports, you know, I was a sports kid. I played everything. You know, my dad was an athlete. My brothers, you know, my older brother, Ed, was a good athlete. So it was like, it was just sort of how I grew up. Sports was a big part of life. And I think that basically somewhere around my sort of early teens, I started to realize, you know, I'd been a fan of wrestling sort of on the fringe, you know, like a lot of kids. I think I looked at the WWF as like a kid's show, like a lot, you know, in the early 90s, like a lot of kids, they sort of looked at it the same way you looked at like Ghostbusters or Power Rangers or something. But, you know, I didn't really understand that it was a business, and, you know, I just kind of, you know, because that was how it was. It was cartoonish, you know. So as a result, I was very familiar with it, and Bret Hart was like my hero, Davey Boy. Like, I thought Bret Hart was just the coolest guy I'd ever seen. But it was later on, once I started sort of working out and lifting weights and sort of understanding, oh, maybe on a subconscious level, like, I kind of want to look like that. And because I was skinny, you know, I had what you would call now a sort of negative body image, you know, where I was sort of self-conscious about being skinny and, you know, puny and all that kind of thing. And people would say, oh, you know, you, like, my father was a rugby player, for example, and I couldn't play rugby. Like, I was too skinny, you know, I didn't have the size, I would have got killed, you know. So I think there was a sort of, there was a bit of that. And I think the other part was that when I started to really understand what this was, and so see these guys kind of commanding an entire arena just with their words, or just with an entrance, or just with their presence and stuff, I started realizing that wrestling kind of scratched both itches. Like, you know, you're somewhere between an athlete and an entertainer, at least I think you are if you're doing it right. You know, and it suddenly dawned on me that that's what I want to do. Like, I don't believe that you have to be a huge fan of wrestling to be good at it, you know, but for the most part, you kind of need to understand what it does to a fan, you know, by being a fan, so that you can then understand how to sort of convey those same feelings, and so you can understand how to protect it and take it seriously. So I sort of lost interest in team sports first, and then, you know, and then progressively even lost interest in individual sports. I mean, because I was a good swimmer, and it, like, I dare say, you know, and it's one of those sort of classic cliche things, I could have been this, but I think if I'd have applied myself and, you know, had a real passion for it, like, I could have gone quite a long way with it. But I just wasn't interested. I was like, I started realizing then, like, I was studying the business. Like, I was reading everything, and I was, you know, watching stuff over and over again, and realizing without even thinking, like, man, I'm watching this again. You know, like, I don't want to watch anything else. I want to watch this match again. Like, because there would be certain moments in it, or certain moves or certain mannerisms that I would go, God, I want to see that again. So I think, you know, subconsciously, I was already studying the business. So I was sort of becoming a student of the game. And then, you know, by the time I was 15, 16, like, I'd pretty much sort of made up my mind, like, I'm going to give this a shot one way or the other. Now, part two of that question you asked about GPB. When it was first described to me that we were going to do a studio show, I was a bit sort of, I wasn't underwhelmed, but it wasn't like I went, oh, wow, and I could immediately see what we have now with NWA Power in my mind. It wasn't like, like the thing that I always consider my baby, so to speak, is 10 pounds of gold. Like that was very much like my influence. You know, it wasn't not entirely, you know, it wasn't solely my efforts, you know, but it was, I was definitely the one who said, hey, I want to make a series that feels like HBO or Showtime. It has that seriousness and that cinematic, but not scripted, you know, like I wanted it anyway. So with the studio show, you know, that was something that Billy had always had a passion about wanting to do. And I remember him bringing it up and sort of being like, oh, okay, you know, like, you know. But when I think of, I think, you know, outside of Mid-Atlantic or Mid-South, like any studio wrestling that I had seen had always been a bit kind of underwhelmed and always just like it. I understood the purpose of it at the time. And obviously the promos were like, you know, that you could dig through some, you know, all kinds of studio shows from all over the territories and find like promos that would just demolish anything today. But, you know, there was a lot of, to me, you know, it didn't have the same sort of, it didn't have the things that attracted me to the business, let's say. So having said that, then I started really sort of going back and going through it again and sort of going, okay, let me look through, because now this, and of course I'm basing this off of my previous exposure to studio wrestling prior to right. the WWE network, you know, and obviously with them curating so much of that footage from all the different territories, it was a bit easier then to find, you know, the best examples. So then I sort of really went and did a deep dive and started studying, and then I started really getting excited about it. And then between, you know, a handful of us, we were sort of throwing in our sort of bits of inspiration, like, hey, watch this, or like, look at the aesthetic of this and check this out. And, you know, we had done little things along the way. Like we had done the old school, like blue canvas and all that stuff at the Crockett Cup. And we'd seen the response to that and everybody would be like, oh my God, I love the ring. It's so great. Like, so then we were, okay, that's a hit. That's a winner. We'll keep that. We'll do like the flags, you know, okay, we'll keep that. And it was like, we wanted the podium and the interview set to look like a sort of, I think my exact words were, if Jim Crockett Promotions had never gone away, like what would it look like today? You know, and that, so that was kind of, you know, we, when we were sort of working with the set designers, we were sort of posing a series of questions, you know, like if Mid-South or Georgia Championship Wrestling or Mid-Atlantic or whatever, if they hadn't gone away and they were still doing that model today, you know, what would it look like with some modern sort of tweaks without it being modernized, you know? So, but man, once when we, I would put that first day of NWA Power tapings, like season one, episode one, up there with my greatest experiences of my career. One of the greatest days of my career, without a doubt. Like the feeling in the building that day with everybody, seeing everybody from like Jim Cornette to you know, brand new guys, sort of millennial wrestlers, all just coming in and being so excited and just having that thing of like, I can't wait to get to work. Like, I can't wait to get a fucking promo at this podium or like get to sit at this desk or, you know, work in this ring. And then that's how, and then feeling like we heard the people come in and, you know, the people that came that first time, they were the ones who had really been on the journey with us, like from day one or from, you know, very early. And like, you could feel the electricity and the sort of the joy, like you could feel it like through the wall. Like we were in, you know, we're the other side of the wall, like in the green room and dressing room areas and, you know, backstage and all that. And like, you can just hear this buzz, like where you just go, man. And you know, I just knew I'd done enough at that point to know like, they're going to be so responsive. They're going to be so ready to go. And, you know, going out and doing that first promo, like that was a privilege and, you know, Billy and I never needed to have a conversation about it really, but we had a very subtle one where Billy was kind of like, we're opening with you, you know, like, you know, not in a, not sort of like, oh, you know, this is a gift. Like, he's like, we're opening with you, you know, so like, set the table, you know what I mean? Like, this is, you know, this is what you've asked for. This is what you want. Like, this is, you know, what you've sort of worked for. Now let's pull everybody else up and make everybody else realize what time it is.
Well, Champ, that first episode you talk about, your interview that you mentioned, you know, I remember the line you used, you know, from a punchline to a headline. And after you use that line, it's like, I'm totally in. And the end of that first episode that you mentioned, of course, you had a matchup with Tim Storm, and it was basically the rubber match, part three, between you guys. Tim's a gentleman we've had on our show a couple times. I got a chance to visit with him. What was your kind of thoughts about your rivalry that you had with Tim Storm and then having that culminate in that first episode of Power?
I think my rivalry with Tim, and, you know, this span of time that I've got to spend with Tim in my career, is one of the greatest gifts that this business has given me. Because it was so unexpected, and just a little bit like Cody and I, one of those rare moments where all the right pieces were on the right positions on the board at the right time, you know? And the, you know, the just the way that whole thing sort of came about with Billy buying the company, and pretty much deciding, like, I'm gonna, you know, start from scratch. Like, he, you know, in his mind, he had bought a brand, he had bought an intellectual property, you know, and then. Because, you know, I remember the conversation when I remember seeing the news that he'd bought it. And then a few days later, my phone rang, you know, so it was kind of like, and then I thought, oh, okay. Cause I wasn't really sure what he was going to do. And then once he called me, I was okay. I guess he's doing something. And then a short while after that, I think I had already at least planted the seed for the 10 pounds, you know, sort of described kind of that sort of concept. And like, I would love to try doing something like that. And it was shortly after that, that it was then I got another phone call, and it was, you know, hey, here's the thing. I was going to strip everybody of all the belts and just kind of start from scratch and figure it out. But there's something about this guy, Tim Storm. He's the current world champion. You know, do you know him? I said, no, I don't, you know, he was just described, you know, he said, look, this guy, he's a school teacher but he's such a rugged, like, real man. And, you know, so authentic and so genuine. And I'll be honest, when I first heard that, I sort of got this impression that, oh, he's going to be a kind of yeehaw Southern wrestler. And I kind of went, okay, you know, but then I saw some footage that they had shot. I saw some of the raw footage that they had shot with him in his classroom, which ended up being the sort of the first episode of 10 pounds. And I remember immediately just being like, who is this guy? Like, this person, Tim Scoggins, this is a television character. Like, and immediately my promoter head, my sort of promoter mind kicked in, and I started going like, what a great protagonist to my antagonist, you know? And I immediately started thinking of all the ways that I could sort of be the yin to that yang. And it just, you know, and I just immediately was, I remember just saying, I'm in, like, let's do it.
Oh, nice, beautiful. Well, hey, Champ, I'm sitting here in sunny Springfield, Missouri, and I have read multiple things that you have a little bit of Missouri history. You did some training with Harley. You went up to WLW and did some training up there. And what can you tell? What was your first impression of Harley Race?
Well, I was like most guys who had done their homework, I was appropriately terrified. I just think back to that period, and there was a few of us who came over from England, and that was my first time in the United States. Well, except for, I guess, a couple of layovers in Minneapolis when I would go to visit my family in Canada. But first time actually visiting. And I remember we all piled into this little Mazda rental car and we're driving. I mean, we've all had to save up. Like, I was already a full-time wrestler at this point, but I was, you know, not making a lot of money. I was working the holiday camps. But I had saved up, like, the money to pay for the flights and the hotel and the camp and the whole thing, you know, and my part of the rental car and stuff. And it's like blazing hot, and we drive out into Eldon, Missouri, like, and we're just looking around, just going like, what have we got ourselves into? Like, what is this place? And I remember legit seeing a pickup truck with like a couple of guys sitting on the back in dungarees, like overalls. And I just remember just like, I mean, I live in Tennessee. I see guys all the time now.
That was probably Stephen E.
Yeah. But I remember seeing these and just being like, I thought that was just on TV. Like, I didn't realize that these people actually existed, you know. Anyway, we got a lot of, y'all ain't from around these parts, you know, like, we got a lot of that. I just, you know, we went to Eldon. Eldon's a really, it was a really cute little town, just a, you know, and we pull up, and I can't remember whether we first met them at the, I think it was at the building that they were doing the training, which was like right in the middle of downtown. And I just remember Harley was just sort of sitting there like a kind of proud silverback, you know, like, he just, you know, these people kind of would, you know, because he's, you know, he's the Don, you know, like, everyone sort of goes to him, and, you know, blah, blah. And I just remember going over and you know, shaking his hand. His hand's like a friggin' catcher's mitt. And he looked at me, and he's like, you came all the way from England, huh? And I was like, yes, sir, I did. And he's just like, oh, impressive. I hope it's worth it. And I was just kind of like, me too. But, you know, he was very, very welcoming. You know, I think, like, he obviously took somewhat of a shine to me. I don't think I certainly wasn't special by any means, but I could tell that out of the group of guys who were at that camp, and Joe Hennig was one of them, Sam Shore, who's now Dexter Lumis in NXT, he was one of them. We've been friends ever since then. And there were a couple of other guys at that camp, you know, and you could tell that there was a lot of, like, I will say this, most of the guys at that camp were pretty good. Like, it wasn't like there was some, you know, a lot of the time you do stuff like that, and there's a couple of guys that just, you know, shouldn't be anywhere near a wrestling ring. But that wasn't the case. But there was still, out of the group, there was about half a dozen guys that you could sort of look at and go, between their look and their personality and their, you know, and their ability and stuff, like, okay, this guy's got a chance. And I like to think I was one of them. And I think Harley did, because we would do drills or do whatever. And it was like, a lot of the time, you know, Harley would just sort of sit and watch, and they'd have like assistant coaches who were like picking things apart and whatever. But then I would do my stuff, and I'd get a little bit of, you know, feedback or whatever. And then Harley would be like, you know, like this. And I go over, and he'd just give like a little, you know, like, always remember that there's people at the very back, you know, all these just little bits, you know, like that, you know. And then after about two or three days, I just remember he pulled me over and was like, you're looking real good out there, kid. You could do something in the business and keep working. And I mean, to me, that was just like, you know,
wow, what a compliment.
That was the coolest moment. So yeah, I mean, just to, you know, and I learned so much at that camp, about, like, more, you know, from the sort of fundamentals point of view of American style wrestling, because obviously I, you know, came up in the UK, and a lot of my training, a lot of my trainers were old school British kind of shooters and, you know, technical European style and stuff. And, you know, the thing that that camp gave me was just a much better feel for the sort of the more flat back bump taking kind of smash mouth, you know, more kind of heel baby face psychology type of style that American wrestling is. It's just, you know, that what's sort of now, you know, the main pro wrestling throughout the world, apart from obviously in Japan or Mexico. So it was like basically the style you needed to be able to know if you were going to have a chance of doing anything worthwhile on TV. So, you know, yeah, it set me up, because that was in 07, and in 08, I got Gladiators. And then by the fall of 08, I had signed with TNA. So, yeah.
You know, we mentioned Bret Hart and Harley. Your style has always been, to me, has been a combination of Bret and Harley. You're technical, you're methodical, you're a brawler. And recently on Power, you said, "I may not dive, I may not flip, but you can't touch this level of drip," which was gold, by the way. Which leads me, you know, brings me to ask, flipping and diving outside the NWA, is there anything out that another promotion, not to mention any names, is doing that you might think, hey, they're doing it right, or I don't much care for how they're doing things? Is there anything that stands out as far as...
Well, look, I think that the business, I think there's a lot of choice. And one of the reasons why I decided to really, you know, give it my everything with the NWA and really sort of dedicate myself to that on a deeper level was because I feel like a lot of the wrestling shows out there right now are all fighting to compete in the same style. Like and I think there are obvious, the business, there's become this real sort of philosophical debate about the evolution of the style, right? The evolution of pro wrestling. And, you know, it's one of those things. I feel like that debate will never conclude because either side has more than enough circumstantial evidence to sort of support their side of it. You know, like guys who want things to go back to the way they were in the 70s and 80s can say, well, they drew bigger houses, you know, or they did this, or they, you know, the guys were more over, you know. And you can, yes, you know, they also didn't have the guys, the generation before them, completely exposing the business and telling everybody how everything was done, therefore eliminating the, you know, therefore forcing, you know, our generation to do something new, because the audience are like, oh yeah, we know what they're doing, you know, we've seen it like that, yeah, that's a, you know, yeah, they, you know, I mean, everything. Like, I think that's probably the part of this that doesn't get addressed as much as it should, is that, like, it's you know, you can't, the guys who there was a lot of guys who made a lot of money in the industry and drew a lot of money, who then double dipped by then selling the secrets of how it was all done, you know, and that happened way before any of us got into the business. So it's kind of, you know, so it's, and like I said, there are, you can go back even further and you can say, well, we, you know, like the current style can say, well, it has to evolve, and, you know, we have to do it like this because, you know, fans are seeing more stuff now and there's more competition, and they can, you know, there's, you know, 1,000 channels and there's way more content on demand. I mean, you can just goes on and on. But I do believe that wrestling overall, people kind of like it the way it is. Like, there's I do believe in it. There is a formula to it. Like, and I'll say this openly, because I don't think it's controversial, even though I'm sure some clickbaiter will take it and, you know, make a line out of it. But
Joe Galley's not on here, so it's okay. Joe Galley's not on here.
Yeah, so, right. There's plenty of them, trust me. But I would probably say that the one area that sort of Billy and I disagree on probably more than any other is I will often kind of argue the point of, it's always been that way for a reason. You know, like, different doesn't necessarily always mean better, you know. But again, I'm not saying I'm always right, but a lot of the time that's where I tend to land, because I do think that, for me, you know, I like when pro wrestling feels like a sports movie. You know, you follow the journeys of these guys, you're invested in the plight of the protagonist. You know, you're hopefully invested in wanting to see the defeat of the antagonist, like, and along the way enough has been done to make you doubt the outcome enough to go, man, I really need to see how this unfolds, right?
Right.
You'll notice that I was very careful there not to say it's got to be heels, it's got to be baby faces, because that's another never-ending fucking argument that people have, like, oh,
well that's one thing about
heels and baby faces.
One thing about the 10 pounds of gold that you did that I loved, right. It was real. You know, we're
right.
Like UFC MMA fans. I love the packages they do for their fighters, the little vignettes they do. They don't have clear heels or faces, but you get invested behind those people, and you want to see one beat the other one's ass for whatever reason it might be. And I love that you guys do that.
Well, and, you know, again, like, I totally understand the heel babyface thing. Like, look, I love being a heel. But again, since we've come into the business, all of that's been exposed. So, like, you know, and then all that happens is everyone goes, oh, he's a really good heel. He's really good at being a heel. You know, so sometimes you do need to be a bit more creative about how you present a protagonist and an antagonist. That's, I guess, is the way, like, instead of looking at it as like there has to be a heel and there has to be a baby face, I like to look at it as there has to be a protagonist and an antagonist. Now, because there isn't a heel team every year in the Super Bowl. Like, a bunch of people are rooting for one team and a bunch of people are rooting for the other team, you know, and everyone who isn't a fan of either one of those teams is just tuning in because they want to see who's going to be the champion. So it's like, and the same can be said for most other major sports. Like, yeah, there are certain times where a certain character will emerge as a sort of heel, like a John McEnroe or something like that, where they sort of, but even then it's like a guy you love to hate. So it's like, and then there are going to be people who go, I love this guy, you know, Tyson Fury. God, Tyson Fury is so popular in America, but you would have no idea how polarizing he is in the UK. I'm personally a fan of the act, you know. I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, I think he's a great, like, I don't know the guy, but as a character, as an act, like, he, you know, he's one of the most compelling sports characters in the world now. But there are always going to be people who are wanting to see him get beat, and there are always people who are going to want to see him win.
It's like the Logan and Jake Paul, people want to see them get their faces smashed in right now.
Sure. And like, there are also a bunch of, you know, rebellious teenagers who are just, and trolls who are just completely loving watching all these like purists lose their shit when like these YouTube guys knock, you know, professional fighters out. So yeah, it's like, for me, you know, box office is about creating a compelling conflict. And that's what we try to do, as opposed to, like, the one major difference I'd say between a lot of wrestling, and I'm just not going to get into, you know, labeling any one promotion, because I think I've seen it from, you know, a lot of promotions. I've seen some matches on NWA Power where I've been like, that wasn't my cup of tea. But for me, my number one goal is to have wrestling matches that feel like athletic contests are not like a cooperative routine between two guys.
Exactly.
And again, that's not a knock on anyone else's stuff. I know that there are people out there who are like me and want to see matches like that. So that's what I'm going to give them. You know, like I've said many times, we're not trying to be McDonald's. We're not even trying to be Burger King. We're trying to be In-N-Out Burger. Like, you can't get us as easily as you can get the other two. But when you can, it's like, if you're going to bother to do it, like, it's special and it's unique and it's traditional and it's delicious.
Well, Champ, the stories in the buildup, you were talking earlier about the 10 pounds of gold, and I absolutely love that series. And during the buildup of that series, you were defending, you were a real world's champion. You were going to China. You were going all over the world defending that belt. Ultimately, you know, and I think it was around, you know, episode 30 in that range that your rivalry started with Cody Rhodes. And the match you have with Cody Rhodes at All In, you know, there's a moment where you guys are getting ready to start and you're facing off and you're just kind of looking at the crowd and kind of taking it in. How did that feel from where you guys started, you know, when you first got the belt, started defending it, going all over the world, to see it culminate to an arena full of people like that? How was that journey?
Definitely. I mean, one of the probably the most special moment of my career, certainly the most satisfying, because I proved myself right. You know, I made a promise to myself that it's like I had this sort of internal dialogue where I said, look, it's going to be fucking difficult, like, to have the NWA title and like go around defending it on these, you know, on independent shows and pretty much any show that would book it. And to present yourself in a way that people are going to take you seriously and give a shit. It's going to be hard. The only way you're going to have a shot is if you 100% commit. And so I did, because I was just like, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm not going to half-ass it. So that's why, you know, even I would wear a suit even if I was going to do radio, you know, like, which makes, you know, it doesn't matter. I could be wearing anything. And I would, you know, insist every show that we did, I would insist that that we presented, you know, we did in-ring introductions, in-ring referee instructions, you know, and things like that. Like, that there was a consistency to it. So there was a sort of branding to it where it was like, this is special, you know. And between those efforts and Dave Lagana's efforts with his editing and, you know, with using a lot of the old Houston library footage and stuff like that, you know, we got it done. We got people invested. The moment in Chicago, I just always felt like, you know, the fans in that building were smart fans. You know, there's no doubt about that. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, they're in fact the highest dollar per head contributors, you know, consumers. So, but it was, you know, I knew they were smart fans, and I always felt like that moment was almost like I would imagine most people in the building that night probably had a pretty good idea of how it was going to turn out. Certainly how they wanted it to turn out. But I always got the feeling that that moment at the beginning was almost like a little bit of like a pop for me, like a kind of, hey, you did a good job. Like, you know, this whole, like, it was a standing ovation, obviously, but it was like a standing ovation for a play, but at the beginning, you know, where everyone kind of went to both of us, like, bravo, gentlemen, like, you guys, like, the work was already done, you know. I had this conversation with Pat Kenny before. I said, you know, the good workers get the work done before the bell rings. Like, then it gets much easier. Like, the guys who make it hard for themselves are the guys who are you know, starting at zero when the bell rings. Like, and that's basically the difference between my work in the last like 4 or 5 years compared to my work in TNA, was that like now I sort of completely understand that, that everything is about getting them as primed and as ready as possible before your match begins, so that by the time it starts, it's easier. You know, you're halfway home already. Like, you just got to deliver it, because you know the work, the hard part's already been done.
COVID-19's obviously, you know, caused a lot of unfortunate issues, and one is it put the NWO on pause briefly, and you lost a little bit of talent. Some went to some other organizations, but you guys have done a fantastic job at bringing fresh faces in and filling those gaps. There's a lot of hot free agents out there right now. You mentioned Joe Henning earlier, which I would love to see him in the NWA. How did COVID-19 affect Billy Corgan's 5-year plan? And is there anyone out there that the NWA has their eyes on to bring in?
Well, yeah, obviously the 5-year plan got derailed somewhat. You know, look, it was hard. Like, you know, I've talked about it to death, but I felt like we probably suffered the worst out of the major brands in the industry, like from the pandemic, because the timing was worse for us than anybody else. You know, WWE, obviously they're almost, you can't even really keep having the same conversation. They're so big. AEW, tremendously well-funded, you know, well-established television time slot, you know, and they've got a very loyal fan base. Impact is owned by a billionaire corporation. Ring of Honor, owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, completely safe line item for that giant corporation, not going anywhere. The NWA, huge amount of momentum, like brand value just exponentially growing by the day. We roll the dice on an arena, Gateway Center in Atlanta, is about halfway sold, you know, and then boom, pandemic hits. And like, we don't have a TV deal. You know what I mean? We were operating old school. We were putting all our eggs in one basket, going for pay-per-views and ticket sales. Like, the show was the shop window to get people to buy tickets, to buy pay-per-view. So, you know, now we've got nothing to sell them because they can't buy tickets. So, and, you know, it obviously it was, you know, a massive blow. You know, I was absolutely frustrated at times during last year, because I felt the need to sort of keep momentum going a little more. But, you know, there were other factors that obviously made Billy very reluctant to, you know, to act. He needed time. And I will say this, you know, some people obviously will have, there's always going to be wrestlers who have gripes about this or that. And it's become very trendy to trash the whatever promotion you leave on the way out, which I just never understand. Like, you're just advertising to everyone right. else in the industry that they shouldn't work with you when you do that.
Yep.
And you know, the good stuff that doesn't get talked about because it's not juicy. It doesn't make headlines, but Billy paid me my full salary the entire time. And there are days where I'm going, let's do something. Let's do anything, you know, primarily like, and part of that was because I didn't feel good about taking a salary for doing nothing. But he was like, no, like, you earned this. Like, this is, you know, I'm taking care of you. And I, you know, and it's like, that's a big thing for someone in the wrestling business to do, because this is a cruel, tough business. And, you know, a lot of the time, the office, for lack of a better word, you know, just as all encompassing, anyone who's basically controlling wrestling rather than performing it, you know, it can be a one way street a lot of the time. It's kind of like, until you've developed enough leverage for yourself, it's pretty one way. It's like, all right, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and you're going to work for us. And then, you know, if we change our mind, it's, you know, we chew you up and spit you out. That's just the way the business works. So for the guy to just be like, no, I'm, you know, I don't want to do anything right now, but I also, but you know, I'm going to keep paying you. Like, yeah, it's a, that's a hell of a thing to do. So I was just, I allowed myself, I guess, the luxury to sort of think of, you know, work on some other things and, just basically say, okay, well, I'm ready to go, you know, whenever you are. And Legacy Sports Nutrition has been born out of that. I taught myself, you know, how to edit, you know, obviously still a work in progress on that, but, you know, had a stab at making some, I made the 10 pounds of gold piece for my match with Mike Bennett. You know, I put together the, you know, some other pieces, you know, content sort of as a producer and director. So it's like, I felt like people always bring it up to me like, oh man, the company really suffered and, you know, oh, you lost talent. We didn't really lose talent. There were talent who were only under contract for that season. And then there wasn't another season to do. So they were, you know, so they were free to go, you know, do whatever they want. Like, you know, it wasn't like they all jumped ship. Like, it's, you know, sorry to burst people's bubble, but like the company was not in a position to have a ton of guys on like full-term salaries, you know? But the, you know, for me personally, I ended up, you know, turning a negative into a positive, and 2020 ended up being a very, very transformative, positive year for me personally.
Well, champ, you know, you mentioned, you know, NWA now, NWA's back. We're excited. Power's back. Of course, you came back for the attack with the pay-per-view that came back. And, you know, we got a chance to interview, you know, Trevor Murdoch a week before that pay-per-view. And the phrase he kept using is, hey, this is for Joseph. This is for Joseph. The match you had with Aaron Stevens, the emotion in that match, kind of tell us a little bit about that.
When we were debating an opponent, that with that show, you know, we knew that it was going to be basically a reset. Like, we're back, and we'd signed the deal with Fight, and that was, so again, in a weird way, you know, we went from making a lot of progress and momentum to losing a lot of momentum and making no progress, to then jumping ahead and getting a paid, you know, streaming deal. So it's like, in a weird way, it all, you know, it worked out, and we sort of got back on track somewhat. But Fight's, one of Fight's things was, we'd like to start with a pay-per-view because we think they'll be in, you know, we think it'll do a good number just for you guys being back. And that will obviously help sort of get the financial ball rolling for them, so to speak, you know, with a nice chunk of change from pay-per-view buy rates. So it was, you know, it was difficult because obviously when it was presented to us like that, you know, my first impression was, well, we can't build, you know, how do we build, you know, build to it, right? Because that's the way my brain works with wrestling. It's okay, you know, you build to it. So right away, you're sort of looking at like, okay, best foot forward. All right, you know, we'll do Trevor and Tom, you know, that they'll tear the house down. Like, you know, like that's going to be exactly what, not just tear the house down, but like tear the house down in a type of match that embodies what this brand wants to represent in the market compared to other brands. Okay, you know, Thunder Rosa and Camille, let's do it. You know, like we had been planting the seed for it before, and then obviously it all got derailed, and it's like, fuck it, let's just do it. You know, like just okay, best foot forward. You know, like let's put matches on that people go, oh, okay. And then what was funny was we got stuck with the world title, because we were kind of going, you know, it doesn't feel right to do me and Tim like that, require, you know, that just that's not something that you're just going to do cold like that. You know, and we're sort of, you know, we're throwing out, do we bring someone else in from, you know, do we look for a name outside? There was a lot of different stuff being kicked around. And then obviously tragedy strikes. And that just sort of that kind of just took us all out of the moment for a week or two. Like we were all just sort of, you know, shocked, completely shell shocked. It was a congenital heart defect. Like it turned out to be something that was just completely undetected, and they had, you know, that no one knew about, and it just, you know, Joseph just, he's gone, you know, and it was just so, so sad and so shocking and so sudden and just like, and it was just weird because we'd been on this high of like, okay, we've got the fight deal done and we're building to it and we're back on it. And then, you know, this happens. But obviously it's that horrible, awkward kind of conversation of, well, we have to get back to work. Like at some point, you know, a few days pass and, you know, whatever. You come to that moment where we go, we've got to get back on track. We've got to get back to work. And it just, and it, Billy and I were texting about something. I mean, we primarily communicate by texts. Like, and it just suddenly occurred to me and I went, you know, Aaron's such a good worker. Like, and he'd been very dedicated, you know, he'd been very, very, he'd sort of rekindled his passion for the business because of the NWA. He had been very active during the sort of downtime, you know, just, hey, what can I do to help? If there's anything I can do, you know, like, what about this? What about that? Any way I can contribute? And then, you know, between those factors and obviously the connection, I just sort of said to Bill, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, nothing else feels right. So I sort of said to him, unless you feel like this comes across as distasteful or exploitative, I think Aaron challenging for the title in honor of Joseph on a show dedicated to Joseph seems to make the most sense. And I feel like this is always like a pretentious thing to say, but I do believe it. You know, I think if Joseph could pick one guy out of ever, it probably would have been Aaron. So, and when I sort of put it like that, it was just this weird moment where Billy and I both kind of went, yeah, like it was right there in front of us. And it was just, you know, we were sort of careful about it. We had to make sure that Aaron was cool with it. And, but Aaron's thought on it was the same as mine. Like, it's not exploitative if it's real. Like, it's, you know, it's only distasteful and exploitative if it's not genuine. And it was 100% genuine.
I know you get asked this a lot, especially by Dave LaGreca, so I apologize for being repetitive here, but
oh boy.
There's been a lot of crossover with various companies these days. Even the NWA has worked with ROH and AEW with Thunder Rosa. Earlier this week, Camille was on Busted Open and said she'd like to work with Jade Cargill of AEW someday. You've already worked with Cody. If Billy was cool with it, if Tony was cool with it, if you were cool with it, is there anybody, maybe like a Kenny Omega, that you'd be open to working with, if it made sense?
I'd be open to work with a lot of guys over there. Obviously, they've got some, you know, there's some top talent there. Like that's never been the issue. You know, I will say, I don't get I get presented. you know, on a weekly basis, various promotions around the world will say, we want you to come in and wrestle our champion. And I'll always say, well, why would you want to do that? Like, there's no outcome to that that's satisfying to your audience, and certainly not satisfying to your brand. So, you know, it's certainly not smart business. I always just feel like that whole thing is something that is sounds good for one night, sounds good on paper. What do you do next?
Right. There's nothing long term.
It's always whenever people present that, so I always go, okay, now what? Then what? You know, not worth it, in my opinion. But so, that's got nothing to do with Kenny. Like, the fans have started trying to create this thing where, like, I'm, you know, they're desperate for me to trash Kenny. And I'm not going to do that. Like, I think he's a great wrestler. You know, he's a very good talent. Like, Of course I did. Like, it does, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And I don't know him well, but we've crossed paths here and there. And obviously I know Nick and Matt well. I've known him for a long time. Obviously I know Cody well. Like, I have a ton of respect for Jericho. I have a ton of respect for Moxley. Like, I just, you know, Eddie Kingston's one of my favorite guys, like, in the business. It's like, Ricky Starks, I called him my draft pick. Like, there is no territorial sort of, you know, dislike or anything here. I don't know why people are always trying to sort of force you to be like anti, you know, one place. So, I mean, as far as those guys, like, yeah, dude, I think sometimes, hey, that would be a hell of a match. Of course. Especially with the contrast that I provide to a lot of those guys. But, you know, we're also trying to, we're trying to maintain value in what we're doing, and it's, you know, we're operating a very different business model, so we need to have certain things that are unique to that thing to make people want to pay for it. Like, yeah, like, if everyone, again, oh, it'd be so great to see you come out on Dynamite or NXT or whatever with the world title. Yeah, it would. But we're also trying to get people to pay to see it. So it's like, you know, you have to be careful. But out of the guys there at AEW, I should say, I still think that my best match would be Cody. But then, you know, I've never wrestled Jericho, and I've never wrestled Kenny, and I've never wrestled Moxley. So it's like, I would love to wrestle all of them at some point. You know, whether or not that happens remains to be seen.
You know, Miranda Gordy, she's a good friend. She's frequently on, the daughter of Terry Bam Bam Gordy Freebird, second generational superstar. It's no secret you're married to Mickie James. You guys have a little one. This is a far-off question, but have you guys thought, what if he comes to you one day and says, Mommy, Daddy, I think I want to be a wrestler? Is that a conversation like, hold on, son, let's talk about this first? Or would that be something you supportive?
It's not something that we give a lot of thought to. We get asked about it quite a bit. And, oh, yeah. And, well, you know, he's six, so it's like, who knows? I will say that up until this last set of TV tapings, in the last set of power tapings, Donovan had been to every single set of NWA power tapings prior to those ones. And that was deliberate on my part because like I said, the way I described the vibe backstage and the energy, I wanted him to be exposed to that. Like, I wanted him to see, to feel like, you know, a group of professionals, like, who are really passionate and really working hard and all on the same page and all working toward the same goal and encouraging each other and, like, you know, getting, you know, plugging into that energy source. not because I wanted him to be a wrestler one day, just because I believe in, I love seeing people who are absolutely in state, you know, who are doing what they do best, like, and with passion and energy and focus and drive, you know. Like I posted a video a few days ago of I was powerlifting with a group of guys that I train with here in White House. And like Bull, the coach, he's held like 20 different world records in powerlifting over the course of his career. And it's like, you know, that's what defines these guys. Like, that's what they love to do. Like, I've never, you know, it wasn't like I went, oh, cool, powerlifting. That's what, but they, like Bull, you know, we, like, I got to know him, we became friends, and he started going, you should come train with us. And I'm going, ah, you know, powerlifting is not for me. I don't do that stuff. Like, blah, blah, blah. He's like, it's fun. Like, you should try it. And now, like, me and the boys, like me and Tom and Crimson, like, we all go, because it's just, it's an adrenaline rush being in the room with those guys when they're like, these guys are up, you know, squatting like 800, 900, 1,000 pounds. And, you know, everyone's just there, like, cheering them on and, you know, and forcing them to sort of dig deep and make it happen and do it. Like, I completely believe in that. And that's one of the main reasons I like going. And so for my son, like, he's been at Monday Night Raw. He's been at Wembley Arena, like, for Impact when I was there. Like, you know, yeah, he was a baby then, but it's like, he was at Wembley Arena when his mum and dad were doing an angle, like, in front of 10,000 people together, you know? Like, and now he's been at NWA Power, you know, and he's been exposed to all that, and he understands it, and he's seen the process. And, you know, it's like, if he ever chose to work in the business in any way, like, he's got a completely invaluable education, you know, and work experience before he even starts. But it's also an education that could be applied to any other facet of life that he wants to do, because I would tell him to follow his passion, because basically, and that's what I wanted him to be exposed to in Atlanta, was just, this is what it looks like when you have a bunch of guys who are following their passion and have turned it into a career. Like, find yours and do the same. Like, and you will have a rich and fulfilling life.
Nick, you were talking a little bit about the powerlifting, and I know you're dedicated to staying in shape. Kind of tell us a little bit about Legacy Sports Nutrition. I'm interested, because, you know, I'm definitely going to go online and get something, because it's something that's, you know, I got to get in shape. I got to get healthy again. I'm in my 40s. I can't cut weight like I used to. You know, I need to get in shape. So tell us a little bit about this new venture.
Yeah, look, it's funny, because when I, like I mentioned earlier, when I first really developed the passion for wrestling, and I sort of subconsciously, or at least I realized later on, subconsciously, I was studying it and applying myself to it, I had the same passion for bodybuilding and for, for sort of fitness and nutrition. Because, like, I was a good student at school. Like, I, you know, I did fairly well. Like, but as I got older into my teens, I went from sort of, you know, A's to B plus to B's to, you know, the occasional B minus to C, you know, just because I lost passion. You know, I'd sit there going, like, why do I give a shit about Pythagoras theorem? You know, like, I started having that, you know, internal dialogue. Because I sort of, the way my brain works, I'm sort of going, like, there's only a certain amount of space up there. I don't want to, you know, I need to fill it with stuff that I care about. But then it occurred to me one day that I would read, like, Muscle and Fitness, or, you know, or like Flex or one of those. And it would just boom, download, like, it was there, you know. And then it was Arnold's books and Frank Zane's books and Mike Mentzer's books and Dorian Yates' books. It was like, it just all just downloaded, like, into my hard drive. And so, and I've always understood like how important supplementation is, and you know, with your diet, like supplements are not a magic, they're not a magic formula, right? Like if you're sitting on the couch too much and you're eating chips too often and you're like drinking too many beers and you're having dessert one too many times, taking a bunch of supplements is not going to do a whole lot. But if you can be consistent with your diet, not, you know, you ain't got to starve yourself, and you haven't got to go extreme. You haven't got to do like chicken and broccoli every meal every day. Like, but if you can be somewhat consistent and limit your, you know, sort of limit your cheat stuff and maintain a, you know, high protein, sort of moderate fats, moderate carbs kind of diet, and make sure you get plenty of greens and, you know, plenty of water, now the supplements are going to come into play. Because now if you can take all the things that are going to spark all those different internal processes, like that's what's then going to, like, it's like put, you know, it's like putting seasoning on a steak, you know, it's like, that's going to be the thing that just puts you, takes it a couple more degrees. And I'm not a PhD. I'm by no means, like a world renowned authority on the matter, but I am a guy who practices what he preaches and has been doing it for 20 years. And so when I thought about when the opportunity sort of came to me to launch this, I started looking into some stuff, and we developed the formulas, and I just started going, that's a supplement I would take. Every single product in the line. And at the moment, it's only five products. I actually just got off a phone call today where we're going to expand the line.
Great.
But every single one of the products, you know, by the time it's done and I'm signing off on it, it's like, that's a supplement I would take. Like, I take every single one of these. They're in my cupboards now. And man, it's been very, very rewarding. Like, sort of soft launched in December, and then really got serious with it after in the new year, after we had moved and kind of got settled in and everything. And man, the sales have just, you know, continued to grow, and the brand awareness and like the feedback has been great. Like, I had one guy reach out to me after he took the after he had used the, and he, I recognized the name from, because he was a repeat customer, and he wrote me this really, really nice email where he basically, and I won't give all of it away because it's quite personal, but he basically said that he and his wife had been trying for another child, and like had been unsuccessful. They had one child and they wanted a second, and they had been unsuccessful, and the doctors had pretty much said, there's not really any one thing. It's like, it's just, you know, sperm count or whatever, right? Like, and he said that he goes, I don't know if this is related, but I feel like it is, like, because I feel better. He's like, but I took the test stack, like, and a month later, like, I felt great, and next thing you know, like, we're pregnant again, and we're, you know, and I'm just kind of like, whoa.
that's awesome.
Like, yeah. And look, and again, like, I said to him, I responded to him and said, look, that is circumstantial and coincidental, you know, but like, it did make me feel good to think that if he, you know, if it did play a small role, then fantastic.
You know, you got the, it's
like,
You got the pre-workout, the test boost. You got stuff to help you get shredded. You have one product that I can't push enough. People overlook the importance of rest, sleep, and recovery.
Yes.
Recovery PM.
Yes.
I would push that to the moon because it's so important.
That is, you're 100% right. And that is very much, that's why I wanted it to be in the first wave of products that we put out, because especially now, like, you know, the best sellers in the supplement industry are all, you know, pre-workout, fat burners, test boosters, you know, right. Sure. Like, understandably. But test boosters, not so much, but certainly the other two, you know, primarily they're focused on stimulants or, you know, things to raise your metabolic rate. And yes, in a very sort of black and white view of it, that is a necessary part of intensity, training hard and losing body fat, you know, raising your metabolic rate. But there are a ton of people who are not getting adequate quality sleep. It's not about how long you sleep necessarily. It's about how good a quality the sleep is when you are asleep. And recovery PM, you know, that combination, when I saw that combination, you know,
before, the ashwagandha in it, that's a stress reliever. I mean, it does wonders.
I said, this is a dream. This is an all-star team. Like, the ingredients in recovery PM, most over the counter sleep aids are just melatonin, right?
Right.
A melatonin is great. That's what, you know, that's, it works, but what Recovery PM does is it has melatonin as a sleep aid. It has theanine as a sleep aid, you know, chamomile. But what it also has is a ton of natural tranquilizers. So it's not only going to sort of boost your melatonin levels in your brain to help you actually fall asleep, but it's going to physically sort of relax you and relax you mentally so that you're in a good place to sort of sleep and sleep through the night. Because if you're stressed out and you've had a bunch of caffeine and stuff and you take some melatonin, like, yeah, you might knock out, but there's also a chance that you might wake up at like 5 a.m. and then, you know, toss and turn for the rest, you know, until your alarm goes off. Like, that's what we tried to eliminate. Because I've been a big, big proponent of sleep quality for a long time. I've done a ton of studying on it. And you know, really, like, I think that there are a lot of people who would probably see drastic improvements in their body, their mental performance, you know, their mental health if they could get 2 or 3 months of consistent high quality sleep. Like, limit the screen time, turn the lights down before you go to bed, not just like watch TV until it's bedtime and then try to go to bed. Like, turn the lights down. Once you, like, I do this by habit now. Once I get to about 9-10 o'clock, I use the dimmer or I just turn all the lights down, you know, and I start to, like, okay, if I'm watching TV, like, you know, then I'm going to turn it off for a little while. I'm going to, like, read my book or something, like, just a way to just kind of wind your brain down in stages to sort of prepare yourself for sleep, like lower your body temperature. Like, whether, if that means opening your window and getting a blast of fresh air for a minute, or like taking a cool shower, or like, you know, lower your body temperature. Like, there are all these little things you can do. And then you combine, you know, but, and then you combine that with a product like, you know, Recovery PM. It's like, you're going to feel so much better when you wake up, and you're going to realize after a while that you don't need energy, like artificial energy. You don't need energy drinks and caffeine and stimulants. Like, that's only going to add to the problem in the end. Like, don't get me wrong, I love my coffee. Like, you know, I'm a caffeine freak, but it's like, you want to be able, your real energy and cognitive performance is going to come from getting quality rest.
LegacySups.com. Before we let you off the hook, we have about 10 really rapid fire, very silly, very random, some wrestling, some non-wrestling questions. Greatest TV dad?
Uncle Phil.
Being British, but now in the South, married to a country music singer, in the Aldous household, is it biscuits and gravy or biscuits and tea?
I'm able to differentiate. I can say both.
Both. It's perfect.
I do.
Favorite carnival or county fair food? Now that we've talked about health and fitness, let's talk about junk food.
Funnel cake.
Who looks more like the guy that just shows up randomly at your family reunion that no one really knows for sure that they're actually a relative or not, but is still there and enjoying the party? Danny Dills or Austin Idol?
I was wondering where that was going. Austin Idol.
Yeah.
He's everyone. He's literally the NWA's like crazy uncle.
Who looks more like the director of a funeral home, Mike Tenay or Don Callis?
Oh, wow. I love him, but Mike Tenay, he looks more like he could be the director of a funeral home. I love Mike Tenay.
Who looks more like someone in an antacid commercial struggling to eat a chili dog, Jim Cornette or Paul Heyman?
Oh, come on, man. But I guess it depends on their mood. All right, let's say this. Heyman looks more like it. Cornette sounds more like it.
There you go. Hardest bump or stiffest shot you ever took, and who was responsible for it?
Oof. Yikes. Bully Ray once clobbered me in the back. Just one of these, just a forearm. But came running down the ramp in the impact zone. I was like 22 at the time. I was, you know, I just started. Like it was in British Invasion. And he came, I mean, and he was heavier then too. He came flying down the ramp just and smashed but he hit me like right in the back of the neck, like brainstem. And he hit me so hard, like that I just kind of, for a minute, like I just went like, what the fuck is happening? And I didn't even get time to put my hands up. I just like face planted on the floor. And I came back and Terry Taylor was furious. And I remember just being like, well, you know, look at, because the rest of the match was fine. He just nailed me with that. You know, like it was a little too stiff. But Terry was furious. And I remember thinking, well, you know, because I'd sort of forgotten about it by then because we'd had the whole match. And Terry was like, you realize you were this close to hitting the steel steps, like face first, like right on the edge, you know. And I didn't even realize that at the time. And like, you know, Bubba was just, he's, look, you know, Bubba and I have had an interesting dynamic over the years. But I respect the guy. But he has red light fever. Like when the camera's on, like there are no gaps. And he's a little overzealous. I was probably only about, you know, 230 then. I wasn't 250 like I am now, you know what I mean? You know, and yeah, obviously, you know, I was young and a rookie, so you know, I was taking my lumps.
Who looks more like a guest character from The Office, Kyle Davis or Joe Galli?
Joe Galli.
Clickbait. Okay, here's a controversial one.
I'll say this. Kyle acts more like a character from The Office in real life. Like I could see Kyle being a sort of annoying, like rep from another, like he'd be like the annoying rep from like a different division. Like he was coming in for the day, like, oh, you guys are still using the Exxon 5000? Oh, okay.
So he's the guy that corporate sends in.
Yeah, he'd be the guy, like, kind of who.
He's on the floor above him.
He'd have the Bluetooth headset, and he'd be like, he'd be walking around, and you go to talk to him, and he'd go, "Yeah, okay, all right, yeah, ciao." Like, he'd be that guy.
The controversial one is cheesecake: a cake or a pie?
It's kind of a pie.
That's what I say.
It's pastry on the bottom and the crust.
You know, exactly, it's a filling.
But it's called a cake. Cake is in the name.
Well, yeah, but come on, it's not cheese space cake. It's cheesecake.
Okay, if the movie Roadhouse was real, who looks more like they'd be a regular customer at the Double Deuce bar, Trevor Murdoch or Sal Renaro?
Oh, Trevor Murdoch. I thought you were going to say Trevor Murdoch or Tim Storm.
I don't know about Tim Storm. I don't know if he'd be caught dead in Roadhouse or Double Deuce.
Oh, well, in real, yeah, no, I mean, Tim, yeah, I'm just going by looks alone.
Oh, looks alone.
I mean, yeah, obviously his real character, he'd be far too conservative to be seen as someone like that.
Speaking of Trevor Murdoch, there's a little history between you two, and to say that things have heated up lately would be an understatement. His leave of absence will be ending just in time for this 14-man battle royal that's going to be on Power. If that happens, Trevor Murdoch has got to be considered a serious contender for the 10 pounds of gold.
He's only a serious contender if he wins the battle royal.
Exactly.
I mean, can we just talk for a second about how, I mean, if this isn't stacking the deck against me, I don't know what is. Chris Adonis is the national champion. Then Chris and Tom have a shot at the tag titles, which they, let's face it, they would have won. But then Billy, knowing this, he set that up. But then he says, oh, in the battle royal, no current champions are allowed in the battle royal. So,
slick move. We watched Power last night. Slick move.
Well, Tom Latimer is a top talent. Why should he be disqualified from getting a chance to challenge for the world title? Why should Chris get? Chris is the national champion. That is by definition the number one contender for the world title. Why should he be disqualified? You know, this again, this is what I'm saying, right? Like, different doesn't always mean better. Like, you're not following the tradition. You're not. This doesn't make any sense. So, decided, well, the tag titles can wait. I heard people, you know, running their mouth about it. I basically said to Tom, hey, do you want a chance to be a tag team champion or do you want a chance to be the world champion? Because trust me, if Tom wins that thing, we'll go. Right? Best man win. May the best man win. I just want to make sure that the best man is in there.
I think that would be an outstanding match as well if it comes down to you two. I mean, that you guys
sure would
the house down. When Our Shadows Fall, June 6, 2021 on Fight TV. That about wraps it up, guys. Thank you all for listening. Check out Legacy Sports Nutrition at legacysups.com. Check out Nick Aldis, the NWA, on all forms of social media and Fight TV. Follow us on Facebook at The Slop Drop, on Twitter at The Slop Drop 1. Wherever you get your podcast, we are there. Leave us a good rating, a good review. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Either way, thank you all for listening. And until next time, we're out of here.
Sumo, wait. Everyone watching out there, it's only what? $4-$5 a month. That's a cup of coffee. Subscribe to Fight TV.
$1.25 a week.
That way you can watch Power. $1.25 a week. That's a cup of coffee. Subscribe to it.
Champ, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Goodbye and good night. 1, 2, 3.